This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG for Friday, April 3rd. I'm Dave Benninger. Thanks for joining us. Coming up in the next half hour, we'll check in with students practicing for their first NYO meet of the season. Plus, students around the state are taking a new required mandatory test, and we'll ask a few of them how that's going. It's also Easter weekend.
In his great love for humanity, the Father sent his beloved Son, Jesus Christ, to die in our place.
A local pastor tells us more about the meaning behind the holiday, and we'll continue our three-part series on getting ready for the boating season with our friend Gabe Dunham.
Because when it comes down to it, oil is cheap insurance, and it's a lot easier to change oil than it is to buy a new outboard.
Those stories and more coming up after a look back at some of the week's news. Ahead of what authorities say will be an early start to a potentially dangerous wildfire season, both the Bristol Bay Borough and the City of Dillingham have now put burn bans in effect. Burning yard debris and home burn barrels along with fireworks are prohibited. Authorities are asking for a high level of caution with campfires, which are still permissible. The Wood-Tikchik State Park boat launch was cleared and open this week, earlier than in years past.
Generally at this time, we've got ice piled up at the end of the ramp, and yeah, it's usually mid-May before we see these conditions.
That's Ranger Bill Burkon speaking from Aleknagik. Launch fees were increased at all state park facilities this year, and it now costs $100 for an annual pass at Wood-Tikchik, up from $75. The barges may make it in early this year, too. Alaska Marine Lines say they're planning to have their first delivery in Naknek by about the 15th.
The water temperatures helped out quite a bit, and trying to get everybody set up for the herring fishery. So it looks like we're going to be ahead of schedule than the last few years. This is about earliest we've been there in a few years.
That's AML's seafood manager J.P. Amo. Alaska Logistics tells KDLG News that their first barge delivery is scheduled to arrive around May 1. Vitus Fuel says they're in no rush to make a fuel delivery this spring, as there's plenty on hand after a warm winter. But CEO Mark Smith says customers might see significantly cheaper gas and fuel prices in the year ahead.
That being said, there was a very dramatic drop this winter, and I think a reasonable expectation is that the cost of fuel will be significantly lower.
After the collapse of Omni Enterprise stores around the state, one store has seemed to have rebounded faster than the rest. Tom Lowe manages the Togiak Trading Depot, which closed on March 23rd and reopened the next day as the Togiak Bay Supply, which he says was a pretty smooth start.
It's been going good. We were able to not have to lay anybody off or have a lapse in any payroll. So that's been a nice smooth transition for the employees.
The Togiak store did not have a liquidation sale like other Omni stores did, and Lowe says he had about 75% of the inventory on hand to reopen with. A sign on the N&N Market in Dillingham says they intend to reopen this next Monday. Aleknagik voters supported raising the tax on the fishing lodge package plan sold within the city limits from 5% to 9%. The city's sales tax remains unchanged. Troopers say the body of 74-year-old Henry Williams was found Monday on a spit north of Good News Bay. No clues of Williams or his four-wheeler had turned up since he went missing on a trip between Good News and Platinum on February 27th. The body was sent for an autopsy. Around the state this week, hundreds provided testimony to the Senate Finance Committee on the impacts of proposed cuts within the Senate version of the state's operating budget. Dillingham Police Chief Dan Pasquarello said the city would have a hard time absorbing the proposed $229,000 cut to its community jail program. He said the police would only accept local arrests and keep them till arraignment.
Only 12% of arrestees are released without bail at arraignment. If bail is set, we would not accept them back into our building. The state, Alaska State Troopers, will be responsible for immediately transporting them to Anchorage.
You can find more on this week's news at our website, kdlg.org. The Senate Finance Committee heard from all corners of the state this week on some proposed cuts. One recurrent theme heard in testimony hits a little close to home. Residents from many communities asked the senators to restore some funding for public broadcasting, which had been initially slated for a 100% cut. Many have asked us this week what that would mean to KDLG, so I asked General Manager Rob Carpenter to help provide some of those details. Rob has now been with KDLG for 25 years, and he joins me now. Rob, what does a worst-case scenario of 100% cut of state funding look like to KDLG in your mind?
Well, 100% cut to the radio station would be a loss of approximately $132,000. That's roughly 29.5% of our overall budget. So that's one number. The state funding is also matched through the federal government, and that varies, but it's somewhere around 10 to 15% of that dollar comes from the CPB. So we would lose that, but then down the road, the year after, we would also lose another, 15% of CPB funding because of those lost local revenue dollars.
What would KDLG look like in your mind if that funding disappeared?
Well, certainly, staffing in any organization is the majority of the budget, whether it's school district, city, whatever. Programming is our second highest cost to the station, so we'd have to be looking at programming. But really, it's just, everything would be on the, on the table.
But the station would stay on the air.
Yes, it would.
Wouldn't be a lot of life behind it, probably.
Exactly.
Now, a lot of folks around the state and here locally came out and asked the Senate Finance Committee to put some funding back. There were a lot of letters written, a lot of testimony given. That was appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. And listeners, friends of KDLG stepped up and wrote in and asked, and not only wrote into the legislators, but also showed up at the LIO office and spoke on behalf of the cuts. And it was through those efforts, not only here, but across the state, helped to get that 100%, which was forwarded in the Senate subcommittee to Finance Subcommittee, to the 60% that ended up coming out of the Finance Committee. So, and that was done through an amendment from Lyman Hoffman, Click Bishop, a couple others that were able to get that cut down to 60%.
And we know that when the two bodies work together in conference, that could still change because that's a higher number than what the House had proposed.
Yep. The House Finance Committee proposed 23% cut. Of course, started off with the governor's 18%. So now we're between this 23% and 60%, and they will go into conference, and it could be anywhere from 23% to 60%. So it's just hopefully we've made our point about programming. Our listeners have made the point across the state and have helped to keep from that getting that 100%.
In your 30-year tenure, Rob, what has KDLG meant to this Bristol Bay area?
Well, first of all, we got started as an educational radio station. We still provide that training and education to high school students. But, being a regional radio station that covers the Bristol Bay, most of the Bristol Bay area, listeners have come to rely on us for, weather, messengers. The big one that probably a lot of people don't utilize but is there is the emergency alert system. And, of course, the news. We are really the only news source for the region, and that's one of the importance of the station, that I hear, year in and year out, when we have our pledge drives is the news and the NPR programming. When we went through the budget cuts in the late 80s, NPR was cut, and we had no NPR until I think it was my first year as manager. We brought it back. We were able to do a statewide buy for NPR programming and brought the cost down, and so stations were able to bring it back. So very, very big part of the radio station is having that touch with the world.
Rob Carpenter is the general manager at KDLG with one more pledge drive to go, which we'll talk about later. Rob, thanks so much.
Have a good day.
You're listening to Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. We're excited to see dozens of student athletes practicing for the Native Youth Olympics. 1 foot, 2 foot, Alaska kick, seal hop. The events are exciting and fun to watch, offer wide participation, and the first regional tournament gets underway this afternoon here in Dillingham. Coach Carl Clark tells us that he has the biggest team he's ever had and also the shortest season ever. KDLG's Matt Martin stopped by practice this week and brought us this report.
Watch this. One. At NYO practice, two students battle each other at the Eskimo stick pole.
Two, three.
Dylan, come on. Come on, Dylan. Dylan, go.
Students move from practice station to practice station in the high school gym. One student perfects her double kick as another tries his hand at the one-arm reach. Elementary school teacher Ina Bowker is the assistant coach for the team. She's been training many of these kids on how to participate in the NYO events since they were just little.
And you see how kind of clumsy they are in fourth grade, and then they're really good by the end of the school year. And then fifth grade, they can't wait to start NYO during bilingual classes. And then, of course, in middle school, they can't wait to be in the NYO sport club.
She has watched them grow and develop as athletes. She says it's a treat to see them improve every year.
So many of them, I am hoping, will place on the podium.
Well, maybe John Bowker will go for 1 foot most likely.
Emily MacArthur is a sophomore, and she lists students who she thinks has a chance of making it to the state competition in Anchorage.
Sydney Dre for toe kick, Brittany Dre for seal hop, Cameron Bartman for seal hop, Martin Gardner for 2 foot, and most likely one arm.
MacArthur will be competing in 2 foot this weekend. She started training with Bowker in fourth grade and has been competing since the sixth.
I like that it's an individual thing so that you can just focus on doing it yourself and setting a goal for yourself.
According to assistant coach Bowker, the NYO Games got started many years ago in Nome among rural students at a boarding school.
And they would get together occasionally and compete against each other.
Whatever the origin story, students like senior Danny Miller are just glad to be testing their bodies and building relationships with other competitors.
I mostly enjoy the sportsmanship in NYO because everyone helps everyone, and it's not so much about winning as it is becoming a team.
In addition to preserving culture, NYO also creates memories for both students and coaches. Ina Bowker recalls one such happy memory. She remembers when Brittany Dre was in fourth grade. Bowker taught her the seal hop.
When we went to Bethel 2 years ago, she was our seal hopper. And I was running by her, hollering really hard, go, go, keep going until you cry. That's always been my favorite memory about watching these kids grow to be so good at their event.
Events for the regional competition get underway starting Friday afternoon at the Dillingham High School gym. It's a short season this year. State competition begins in Anchorage on April 16th. In Dillingham, I'm Matt Martin.
Somewhere between 1 and 2 billion Christians begin the celebration of the Easter holiday weekend today, marking the day that Jesus of Nazareth was crucified on a cross known as Good Friday. Easter, like Christmas, has grown many of its own cultural customs that have likely widened those who celebrate the holiday, but Christians say it is the most holy of holidays of the year. For more on this weekend's meaning, Dillingham Moravian Church Pastor Simon Flynn joins us. Pastor, it's good to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
What is the meaning behind the Easter holiday in the Christian faith?
Well, Dave, for the Christian faith, Good Friday celebrates the memorial of Christ's death on the Roman cross. Christianity believes that all of humanity had sinned against God and were unable to pay the penalty or debt of our sin on our own. And so, in his great love for humanity, the Father sent his beloved Son, Jesus Christ, to die in our place. And in dying on the cross, Jesus broke the power of sin over all who put their faith in Jesus Christ. And on Easter, for resurrection, or Resurrection Sunday, as many of us call it, we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ, where Jesus demonstrates that he is exactly who he said he was, that he was God, one with the Father and the Holy Spirit. And also when Jesus resurrected himself from the dead, he broke the power of death so that death is no longer the end, that anyone who puts their faith in Jesus will live forever in heaven with God and with their departed loved ones.
There's a term, CNE Christians, the Christmas and Easter ones. Those seem to be the holidays that draw a lot of people back to church throughout the year. I've always been under the impression that Easter is kind of the more important of the two, though maybe not as commonly celebrated. Is it a more important holiday in the Christian tradition?
Yes. On Christmas, we celebrate Jesus Christ, God being born in the flesh through the Virgin Mary. But in the death and resurrection, Christ accomplished what he came for on Easter, and we celebrate then his death and resurrection.
So what is the meaning or the message behind Easter?
That God loves humanity so much that he sent his only son, Jesus Christ, to die in our place. And God is asking everyone to put their faith and trust in him.
What about some of the cultural add-ins to the holiday? The Easter bunny, Easter egg hunts, Cadbury eggs, Peeps, things like that. Do those widen the message of the holiday or, in your mind, detract from it?
I think there's a lot of things that culture has brought into Christmas and in the holiday of the Resurrection Sunday or Easter service that is not true to the biblical account. But my heart is that we celebrate Jesus Christ dying and rising again. And that's the center. That's the focus.
Pastor, can I ask how you and your family and your church will be celebrating this weekend?
Certainly. Well, most Christian churches have an Easter sunrise service and often a breakfast potluck, and that's what we're going to be having after the Easter sunrise service. And then we'll have an Easter service after that for the main one about 11 o'clock. And for the rest of the day, family, friends, and church family gather together in homes to feast and remember what Christ has done and to fellowship with each other.
Simon Flynn is the pastor at the Moravian Church in downtown Dillingham. Pastor Flynn, thanks for coming in, and happy Easter weekend to you and yours.
Thank you for having me.
High school students across Alaska are adjusting to the new computer-based Alaska Measures of Progress Assessments, standardized testing. KDLG's Hannah Colton has been speaking with some students and teachers locally to find out how things are going, and she brought us this report.
Dillingham students in grades 6 through 10 are taking turns occupying the district's two computer labs to take their AMP exams this week and next. Sixth grade teacher Karen Rhodes says school staff were expecting hiccups with the internet or the computers, but no technical issues have come up so far.
We had no problems at all logging in. We had no problems at all going from test to test. And the students, we had opportunities to practice test before we had the final exam, and that went well. The students were very comfortable, and it was a very smooth process.
The AMP measures students' performance in English reading, writing, and math. The test is designed to function across multiple platforms, including laptops and tablets. The switch to computer-based exams means a different way of interacting with texts, equations, and multiple-choice answers, by scrolling and clicking instead of physically flipping through sheets of paper. Students have different opinions on whether that change is for the better or worse. Kate Gomez is an eighth grader who took the reading and writing sections this week.
The questions on the computer are different because you can go back and read faster than you would be able to with paper and pencil, because in the reading section, they have the passage right next to the question, so you can scroll down if you need to and go to there, like directly to the spot you need, instead of having to maybe flip back a couple pages to go back through the passage.
Sixth grader Caleb Kapotic is not so enthusiastic about the new interface.
It's not too bad. I like the better one is on paper, though.
Oh, why is that?
I don't do well with tests on the computer because it really confuses me and it just shuts down my brain when I can't think about it on, because you're just sitting down on a looking at a screen, and I like it better on paper.
Sixth grader Luke Wolvik said not having to worry about paper and pencil during the test actually made him feel calmer.
I think the computer test was better because it was a lot quicker and you don't have to worry about breaking a pencil and going and sharpening it or getting a new one.
Wolvik says for him, the test didn't take as long because he didn't have to spend time penciling in answer bubbles.
This one, you just click an answer and go to the next.
Rhodes says this year is a test run. Only time and new data will tell whether the new AMP is a good measure of student achievement.
It's a brand new test and brand new content. The state is aware that there's a lot of things, a lot of questions. They're just going to be looking to see if the test hit the mark.
Next week, the 9th and 10th graders will log in and find out how their own personal learning styles mesh or clash with the new exam. In Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
It's time now for part two of our pre-boating season series. Gabe Dunham is our guest. Gabe is the Marine Advisory Program agent in Bristol Bay and also has about 15 years of marine mechanic experience in his background. Last week, he helped us build a boat box, which many of you told us was handy or fun radio. Now this week, Gabe takes us through some spring maintenance. Gabe, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Okay, you walk out to the boat. It's time to put it in the water. Before you do, you want to check some things. What do you check first?
Well, the first thing I'm going to check on a boat is the fuel system. The other thing I would ask is whether or not there's been any sort of fuel conditioner or fuel treatment added to the tank before it was put away last year, because the fuel conditioner really helps to combat water in the tank from condensation. So knowing whether or not that was done would sort of guide my next efforts to try to access the tank and look in the tanks for some water using a flashlight and a combination of a flashlight and maybe a fuel hose with a piece of copper tube on the end of it so I can siphon off any water from the bottom of the tank that I see.
Okay. Moving down towards the fuel filter, I would guess, at this point.
Yep. Then I'd go to the ray core. I'd check for any water in the bottom of the ray core. I'd go up to the engine, and I'd take the cowling off the motor and check that fuel filter that's underneath the cowling, again, looking for water and any foreign materials that shouldn't be there. And if there hasn't been fuel conditioner added to this fuel system and run through the engine in the fall, I would go ahead and drain the carburetors and get that old fuel out of the carburetor float bowls before I tried to start the motor.
That just takes a turning of the right screw on the carburetor bowls if you've got a two-stroke, right?
Well, right. And a carbureted engine in general, I mean, two strokes and four strokes, some models are carbureted. For a fuel-injected motor, you're going to look for something called a vapor separator tank, which looks like a big, huge carburetor bolted onto the side of the motor. And it's got a drain screw toward the bottom of it, too, that you can drain old gas out of.
Flush a little through, see if there was any water. And this is prior to starting the engine.
This is before I even start it, right?
Okay. Next system to check would be?
I would check the electrical system next. Maybe the battery has been taken out, maybe it hasn't, but if it has not been taken out, I would check the connections first to make sure there's not a significant amount of corrosion there. The other thing I would do for a serviceable battery or the kind that have the caps that you can take off and add water to, I'd make sure the water is at the right level.
Okay, electrical good, so what's next on your list?
Next, I check oil in both two-stroke and four-stroke. If you've got a two-stroke with the auto mix oil tank right on the motor, a lot of times those will have a feature towards the bottom of that tank that will let you take one of the hoses off and check for any water in that oil system. So I'd check that, make sure it's full. And then with four-stroke, of course, I would check the engine oil and make sure it's at the right level, the right color and whatnot. Speaking of checking oils, if you've got a prop unit on your boat, you definitely want to check the gear oil at least once a year, because the condition of the gear oil is going to give you an indication of how well that gear case is performing.
So if you didn't check it in the fall, good idea to check it in the spring before you take it out and run.
Definitely. And you're looking for water, you're looking for milky gear oil, or overly burned and smelly gear oil. Both of those are, one is a sign that you've got poor seals on the prop shaft or the drive shaft going into the gear case, and the other is a sign that you've probably should change your gear oil more often.
Okay. So you've got the cowling off. Are you looking at anything else on the motor now before you start it?
I am, yes. One thing that can happen sometimes over the period of the winter is that the control cables or control mechanism can get a little bit sticky. So I'm going to take this opportunity to operate the controls, the shifter and the throttle, with the engine off while observing how everything's moving underneath the cowling and making sure it's all free. I would check the spark plugs and see what kind of wear is there present. Replace them if they need to be replaced, if it's time. I would also take a look on the four strokes. I would take a look at the belt. I would consult my maintenance records and see how many hours I've got on the belt, because they do have a replacement interval that needs to be followed. It's pretty critical.
Okay. Sounds like probably at a point to start it up.
Sounds like it.
All right. So we start it up, and what are you watching for here? This is probably in the driveway or maybe on the ramp.
Sure. You know, the first thing I'm going to watch for is to make sure it's pumping water. And everybody knows, you know, the telltale water indicator coming out of the back.
The pee-hole.
The pee-hole.
Right.
if that's plugged up, which it can be, you can just use a paper clip or a zip tie and unplug it. But if you don't get water out of that pee-hole within, I would say about 10 or 15 seconds, then there's probably an issue with the cooling system.
How often do you want to check a water pump on these motors?
That's going to be something that you first want to look at your owner's manual interval chart for, but second, you want to consider what kind of use you're putting the motor through. The life of a water pump is really directly related to what kind of water you're pumping through it. For example, if you're driving your boat a lot around here in the lower, in the Nooshigak Bay, where the water can be very silty and it can have a lot of sand in it, it's naturally abrasive to the water pump components. It's going to shorten their life.
Every other year, maybe?
Well, I would say if you don't spend a lot of time running in really silty water, I would say every other year. If you spend a lot of time running in silty, sandy waters, I would at least inspect it once a year.
How about jet motors in particular? Anything you're checking before you take it out for the first time?
Yes. Before I take out a jet motor for the first time, I'm going to take off that little grease hose, and I'm going to pump a little bit of grease through there and see what kind of condition the grease is that I pump through there comes out in. Additionally, I will check the reverse gate linkage components. The other thing I will check and make sure that the impeller is shimmed to approximately 30 thousandths or so. The last thing I would do with the jet is to inspect really closely the leading edge of the impeller blades. If they're really dull and if they've got some evidence of having had a few rocks run through the pump, I would pull that impeller out, dress the leading edges with a file, again, sharpening on the underside of the impeller blades, and that'll make the impeller more efficient.
At this point, are we ready to launch and go have a good time?
Assuming you put the plug in the boat, I think you're ready to launch.
All right.
Let the chips fall where they will, 'cause I am gonna build me a boat. With these two hands, it'll be a fair curve from a noble plan. Let the chips fall where they will, 'cause I got
Before we go, some very good causes may see funding cuts, as many this week did attest. Of all the two-minute speakers, we thought one stood out from the rest.
My name is Dan Pascucci, and I am here to speak about the 100% cut in public broadcasting. I'm a guest DJ on KDLL, and would like to give my presentation in poetry form. Alaska is a special land that's full of different places, different landscapes, different towns, and lots of different faces. Different folks that celebrate, lots of different occasions, different families and singles too, different political persuasions. But one thing that ties us all together is our need for information, whether it's the price of oil or beluga populations, or info on our safety and school, or of road closures, or tsunami volcano warnings, or public service disclosures. Now, I know that lots of different groups have asked you for the cash, but please consider one big thing before you make the slash. It's broadcasting all across our state that sends messages for all groups, whether they're trying to fight hunger or fix honey bucket poops. Everyone can find support through open public broadcasting. It's information that connects us, not political commercial lambasting. And don't forget the federal funds that will surely to be lost, a $4.2 million cut with a $7 million loss. Now, me, I'm no Dave Ramsey, but I know that he'd agree. Losing 7 when you cut 4.2 seems a tad silly. Now, I'm just a small Alaskan. I'm no super radio star, but it's the open broadcast networks that keeps us in touch with who we are. So you're the ones that make the calls or on what gets cut and what can stay. I do not envy this hard task that faces you these days. So thank you for your work, and thank you for your time, and thanks to public broadcasting, but sorry for the rhyme.
Thank you, Mr. Pascucci, and thanks for there not being a mandolin involved this time.
You gone fishing.
That's it for this week's Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Send us your feedback to news@kdlg.org. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Hope to see you back here next week.
Could be.
There's your hole out in the sun, where you left a row half done. You claim that hoeing ain't no fun,
but I can prove it.
You ain't got no ambition, gone fishing by a shady, weighty pool.
Shangri-La, really la.
I'm wishing I could be that kind of fool.
Shall I twist your arm?
I'd say no more work for mine.
Welcome to the club.
On my door I'd hang a sign, gone fishing instead of just a wishing.
Papa Bing, I've stopped by your place a time or two lately, and you aren't home either.
Well, I'm a busy man, Louie. I got a lot of big deals cooking. I was probably tied up at the studio.
You aren't tied up, you dog. You just playing old gone fishing. There's a sign upon your door.
Pops, don't blab it around, will you?
Gone fishing.
Keep it shady. I got me a big one staked out.
You ain't working anymore.
I don't have to work. I got me a piece of Gary.
Cows need milking in the barn.
I have the twins on that detail. Each take a side.
But you just don't give a darn.
Give them 4 bits of cow and hand lotion.
You just never seem to learn.
Man, you taught me.
You ain't got no ambition.
You're convincing me.
Gone fishing. Got your hound dog by your side.
That's old Cindy Lou going with me.
Gone fishing. A biting at his hide.
Get away from me, boys, you bother me. Folks won't find us now because Mr. Satch and Mr. Cross, we gone fishing instead of just a wishing.
Bubble, baby, bubble, bubble,
oh, yeah.